Welcome back to A Fresh Story, the podcast where we have conversations about brave decisions to start over again. I'm Olivia.
And I'm Jenny. And we're so glad you're here today.
Hello, 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 Sister Vive. How are you?
Sister Vive.
Sister Vive, I'm going to call you that.
Nobody's ever called me that before. I'm really good. You just told me that we're recording the intro for, which is for Maddie's episode. And my face lit up in a way that I can only describe as like Maddie's. Like, she is just a light, and I feel very proud because I brought her into our world. So you'll hear all about that in the podcast episode. But I just can't wait to share this episode with everybody. We did have to take like a little break in the episode so that she could do a quick tactical chunder and then come back. And I just think that that's amazing. She's amazing. And I've known her now, for 20 years, mm-hmm. which is insane. And she's just a really great person, and I can't wait for you guys to hear this episode because she really had some great fresh starts in her life.
Yeah, but this was really about friendship breakups. This was like a lot about friendship breakups and the heartbreak of friendship breakups. And we don't talk about them, at all. And so
boundaries. It was a lot about boundaries.
Yeah, and work and boundaries.
Codependency and mm-hmm. yeah.
Yeah, it was a really cool episode. Maddie's awesome. So please enjoy this episode with Maddie. And please remember to rate, review, and subscribe to A Fresh Story so that we can keep telling fresh start stories. Hello, everybody. Well, today's guest needs no introduction. She is a staple in our lives mm-hmm. for almost 20 years. Mm-hmm. Right? She is a witch of witches, a woman of women. She is the fantastic, wonderful, brilliant Maddie Eisenhart with us tonight. Jenny, why don't you kick it off?
First of all, Maddie, we are so excited to have you here. I know Maddie because she was not my RA. She was my friend's RA, the floor above me, my sophomore year of college. And I was actually talking to my mom about this tonight. Maddie, you had cookies at like on every Sunday night in your room. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Yeah.
Highlight of my college career, actually, I think.
Mine too. And we had some really important conversations in your apartment those nights. Yeah.
I look back actually, and I have honestly, I think been trying to almost like recreate that magic for the last 20 years because it was so simple and so effective to just be like, my door is open at this time once a week. I remember buying I buy break and bake cookies from the grocery store from the food emporium, I think. And it was great. Like I would get so many wonderful people in, and like, I have a face that says like, tell me your life story. And so like people would just like drop in and tell me what was going on with their lives. Yeah. And I really feel like that is like, that kind of like, I don't know, that like impromptu community building is, I think, one of the most special things I've ever had.
Well, you were so good at it too. I have no idea who my RA was that year, to be honest with you. And it was such a beautiful experience. I was also saying to my mom, you organized us going to like the outlets and stuff like that too, I believe. I think that you are responsible for that.
You know, that tracks, and I also have absolutely no recollection.
Yeah, that was a blur of a year. Were you in that dorm long?
No, I actually, I'm so sad because it was such a great dorm, but I hated the location. So I ended up moving to Union Square the following year, I want to say. And I had to give up my like cushy studio apartment. I had a studio apartment with a king bed in New York City. And I'm always like, it doesn't get any better than
that. You had a king bed. I didn't know that. So the context for what Maddie and I were talking about is that we went to NYU, and my sophomore year, your junior year, this was right. So they did not have enough dorms for us. So they rented an apartment building and they put us all in this apartment building. And so I had a one bedroom apartment in the financial district. My roommate was never there. She like disappeared for months. And I was like, do I do something? Or I don't really know her. And so Maddie had a studio apartment, and it was like, we had dishwashers. I mean, it was a beautiful, I could never afford to live there, but it was the financial district in 2006. So it wasn't what it is now, which is like a swinging place. It was dead after 6 PM.
Yes.
Right? Nothing was open. I used to go to that Turkish supermarket, Zeytuna.
Yeah.
And Jubilee was the other grocery store I used to go to.
Jubilee, that is what it was. It wasn't Food & Prime. That's Union Square.
Jubilee. Wow. We used to go there a lot. But then I kept in touch with Maddie, and then you started doing wedding photography.
Yes. Yes. Yep. Yeah, I think you guys were my first like formal clients. And I kicked off a whole like a whole career path I hadn't intended for myself. Mm-hmm. And it's actually really funny when I was not even preparing for this. I was just scrolling the other day and I actually found like Facebook is like, you know, they love to surface your memories. And I found a message from you from 16 years ago that I think literally was just like, where are you? Back when you use people's Facebooks for like tracking them or whatever. And I thought that was so funny because I was just like, wow. Like,
yeah, it really goes back.
Like, Jenny's just been around for a long ass time. Well,
it's so I like when Olivia was getting engaged, I was like, my friend Maddie is doing photography and you did her engagement photos, which were beautiful. Mm-hmm. And they were at her grandmother's house. Mm-hmm. And then you did her wedding, which was also those photos are beautiful. Mm-hmm. And then at her wedding, I officiated and you came up to me and you said, you're really good at this. You need to be doing this. And I did it for 10 years. And, you know, we were both on that wedding website together. And, you know, I was involved with them too. And, you know, I like, we do this, I guess, to each other. We like, we push each other in this direction. So
yeah,
it was a beautiful relationship.
Well, Maddie did
have you.
So you guys did my engagement photos. Yeah. And those were really special because you took photos of us with our grandmother kind of impromptu, which we have now. And
right, because she also did my portrait photos at my mom's house.
And you guys were around a lot those early years. And we did boudoir photos.
Right.
Which are still some of my favorite photos, still my favorite photos I've ever had taken of myself. That was such a special day. So we don't typically do this, but Maddie, can you give us a little bio about you?
Yeah, I, let's see. I am, I'm like, where do I start? I have been, let's see. Well, I met you guys when I was living in New York City. Mm-hmm. I feel like it really like those couple of years really sort of cemented what has turned into like the last like 10 to 15 year journey for me. Like I was living in New York City, graduated height of recession, and had to like really reimagine what I thought my life was going to look like because everything I had sort of set myself up for evaporated like the year I graduated.
And what did you set yourself up for?
I had been like, I was a very, I was like such a laser focused kid. I had been like, I am going to be a TV producer. I'd done like youth TV all throughout high school. I like hosted my own TV shows. I was oddly a sideline reporter at like high school sports events, which I just like made up as I went along. So I had no idea what was going on. I was like, yeah, that guy has the ball. And that other guy has the ball. And
but you would be like a great TV producer, by the way.
Oh my God. Yeah.
There's still time.
There's still my dream. I'm making my way in TikToks right now. That's my like entry point. But I'm a firm believer that like, I do believe in magic. And I think sometimes the universe just like puts things in place where they need to be. And I wanted to be a broadcast journalist. That was like, I was going to be like the TV news reporter. And I accidentally applied to the wrong school at NYU. I didn't realize that journalism and communications would ever be separated at a university. Doesn't make sense. And so I applied to the communications program at Steinhardt, got a pretty sweet little scholarship. And then I was like, oh shit, this isn't what I wanted. Oops. But I can't back out because if I back out, I'm probably going to lose all this financial aid. And so I called up my best friend and I was like, I made a huge mistake. Talk me through this. And she was like, let's look through the course load. And she was like, this is so much cooler than what you could have done in broadcast journalism. And I was like, well, okay, then I guess this is where we're headed. And so I studied I studied culture and communications, which is like the way that media impacts how we view ourselves in society and how society views itself.
Talk so about that like, all day.
Oh, it's so cool. You're like, you don't even realize the way that like The Bachelor is like impacting how we like deal with our interpersonal relationships.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, this is a wild thing. And then like I had all these internships and like, I had 5 internships, I think, my senior year. And when I graduated, I think 4 out of 5 of those companies had folded in that year. And they were big. It was like New Line Cinema, makers of the friggin' Hobbit. Who else was it? Montel Williams. I forget. Oh, Rosie O'Donnell's documentary production company was up
Wow.
for a sec. And there was like a couple more. And the only one that was still around I left was HBO Sports, because for some godforsaken reason, the sports followed me.
Are
And
you hearing
so,
the angels? They're calling you. They're
right.
telling you where to go.
They're like, you can't escape it. And anyway, I ended up in the film industry for like 2 years. It was miserable. I was like, this place is toxic and misogynistic, and everyone around me is like 35, one level above me in their careers, and miserable. And I do not want to spend the next 10 years climbing a ladder just to end up hating where I am. And that's what ended up. I was also kind of like bored at that job, and so I spent a lot of time online. That's where I discovered blogs. That's where I like started, you know, I had like a little bit of a crisis graduating because I got engaged in college and was stressed out about what that meant about me as a human being. Like, I was
It
like,
was such an interesting thing for you. And you and I have talked about this before, but like you and Michael have such a beautiful relationship and you have for a long time. But it was a surprise because you're such a eldest daughter, independent, modern woman.
yeah,
It was,
I never
why
saw
did he
that. It
propose?
helps that
Why did he
Michael's
propose?
really cute. I'm
Yeah,
just gonna
he's
say
also
that.
cute.
I honestly couldn't begin to. I have no idea what was going on in that man's head, because he was like, "Yeah, I'm not gonna make you that girl who like gets engaged in college," because it's like, obviously, you know, not who I ever strive to be. And I was
That
like,
wasn't happening at NYU.
no,
We'll talk about that on the episode because you have a background that wouldn't necessarily tell that story from your family.
yeah, no. It didn't make any sense for me, but it was also like, well, I'm gonna marry this guy eventually. I just never thought it was gonna happen this, like, from the day I met him, I was like, oh, that's the guy. I remember telling my stepmom, like, it's in my diary. If I don't marry him, I'm gonna be so pissed. And and so I was like, well, obviously it's a yes, but I was like, what the hell? Like, now you want to do this now? And I remember actually being like in the elevators at college and like hiding my rings. I was so mortified, because in New York City, it's like 21 is, that is a child bride in New York City.
Oh my gosh.
And
It was so unusual. I mean, it was so unusual if you weren't Orthodox Jewish at NYU to get engaged that early. There were a lot of married girls. They just weren't from Maine.
no, and I remember actually when I interviewed after college, like, I actually remember people, it was very much used against me in interviews after college. I remember like people, one guy, be after it interned for a couple months, I had an interview at the same company to be somebody's assistant, and I remember him being like, you're engaged? Like, aren't you a little young to be engaged? And then he was like, that's a very inappropriate question, I'm sorry. And I was like, yeah, bro, a really inappropriate question. And like, I interviewed to be a PA for Maury, and they were like, this is an 80-hour work week. Like, you're never gonna see your fiance, so I don't think this is a fit for you.
But it was okay for you never to see your boyfriend,
Right. Yeah.
right?
And I
It's
was
like,
like,
it's the same. We're still Maddie and Michael. It's fine.
yeah. I was like, do you think I'm gonna be like trying to plan my wedding?
I'm
Like,
gonna have to go home and make dinner. Like, what do you think is happening?
yeah.
But I
I
guess.
mean, like, I in hindsight, I, you know, like, totally dodged a bullet there, because it would have been awful, be more abusive than, like, you know, where I ended up. And so yeah, I ended up moving to Connecticut, buying a Subaru, and getting married. And I was like, well, this is my personal hell on paper. And I would cry every time he said the word Subaru. I was like, you're trying to turn me into a soccer mom. And so yeah, so I but like so I ended up writing like my one of my like senior thesis papers on like censorship and marriage. Like, I was really just trying to understand like how the like institution of marriage fits within like how I view myself as a human being. So I ended up finding blogging, finding like feminist wedding websites, because like I think like one of my friends saw me like really struggling and gave me like the Offbeat Bride book, and she was like, this seems like it would be relevant to you. And so then I also was like, nobody in New England is trying to do what I'm trying to do in the wedding, like with my wedding. So like always a marketer being like, I think I could like break into this space. And I really took it was like I offered actually my old intern coordinator, because I'm never going far outside the like professional circles. My old intern coordinator, I like shot her engagement session. Her best friend hired me for her wedding. And so like I had this like little New Jersey cohort. And like I went from like four weddings in 2010 to like 25 in 2011. And it just like blew up. It took off. And yeah, I did that for like, I think I only did that for like, 4.5 years, but it was a very busy, very intense 4.5 years. And then I started working at a wedding website, which you guys know about, a wedding blog. And that ended up becoming, I tried to like balance both of those for a while. And then obviously like that ended up becoming this like very much more than a job, really hugely transformational experience for me on so many fronts. And I feel like is really where, like on paper, that first sort of like shift was a really important one because I had like been working towards something for so long in my like youth, and then really had to abandon this sort of sense of who I thought I was going to be. But then the next like 8 to 10 years were this like really intense exploration of like my interior life and how I thought of myself as like a human being, while also having this like really public sort of job, and doing a lot of very sort of public facing projects. More of the sort of transformation was happening like really internally, I think.
How long were you there at the wedding website?
I was there, I think a little over 8 years.
It's a long time.
A long time. And then in a truly, I'm always like in a stroke of genius, left that really like, and we'll talk about that, I'm sure, but like really sort of burned that all to the ground and left in September of 2019. I was like, not working for me anymore. I'm gonna like just like go in a completely different direction. And like then like 4 months later, we were in lockdown.
Did you move to San Francisco for that or to California for that job?
No, I actually we were in I hated Connecticut from like day one. It was never the right fit for Michael and I was always like New York City
I
or
don't know
bust.
why you would make that decision. I'm gonna
Well, it was the cognitive dissonance of like me in 2008 being like, I'm gonna become Carrie Bradshaw. I'm gonna have my like little one bedroom apartment, you know, I'm gonna be able to afford it on my creative salary. And what ended up happening was like Michael actually was in school in Boston. He got a job in Fairfield County. And
Okay,
we've
that
been
makes
long
sense.
distance for so long. I was like, you're gonna be an hour away. This is a miracle. And then I graduated and I had no options. I
No.
couldn't get a job.
No.
Nobody was like, hey, do you want to be my roommate with your $0? And Michael was like, well, we are engaged, so you could just move in with me. And I was like, you're trying to trap me. I have no problem here. And really, in reality, like he was saving my ass. Like he was like, so instead of moving home with your parents, which never occurred to me as an option, I was like, didn't even cross the mind. I was like, we'll figure some option out.
I got a shoebox over here.
It'll be fine. I ended up moving in with Michael, and it was just close enough that I could commute to the city.
That makes sense. Okay, so he had a job there. I was like, I just couldn't imagine why
It
Connecticut, but that
was
does make sense.
such a bad fit. Hated every moment of it.
So then you moved to California.
Yeah, so Michael ended up getting a job. We had been like, Connecticut's not for us. Michael's friend got a job in California and was like, I'm putting in your resume. You need to get out of here.
You don't have to say what Michael does, but can you just explain his field? Like where, like kind of.
Formerly, because he also had a really big transformation over this period. He's now a proud stay-at-home dad.
I love that for
He
him.
was a mechanical engineer, though. So
Okay,
there is
casual.
like the very TLDR is like every microchip in every technology device you have has like a little pattern printed on it. And he's always worked in the industry that makes sure that when like a Samsung or whatever is printing those microchips, that there is like absolutely nothing wrong with that pattern because if
Got
there's
it.
like 1 millimeter, like micrometer off, it's like Samsung's out $1 billion.
Got it.
So that's what he did forever because Michael will stick around with something, frankly, even longer than I will.
You're big on commitment, you
But
two.
I'm guaranteed that being a stay-at-home parent is harder than all of
Yes, although he does say his boss is preferable. He prefers
that. That's good. That's
Raph
good.
over
But the raises are slow. So before we jump into your fresh starts, what do you do now? Because now you work for a pretty cool company. If you don't have to say the name if you don't want, but
I really love my job now. I work for a baby registry. I do branded content. And it's interesting. It's actually like it's very similar to what I was doing before in terms of like I consider myself like a specialist in the art of like creating content for especially women, but like families who are going through transformations in their lives, right? Weddings, marriage, babies.
All your preparation for when you come work at Fresh Starts is what I'm hearing.
Basically, yes. So I'm like, this is like my deep maternal, like, cancer son roots being like, let me just help, like, shepherd you into like a forever big
keep
sister.
Getting experience, keep gathering so we can just when we're ready to hire you.
And I'm like, but also while you're at it, do you want to like check out this stroller? And I've been doing that since 2019,
which is so funny because I did that. I worked for another baby registry company for 7 years. I was a social media director, and every time I see your content of your littlest one as like the content baby, my littlest one was a content baby for like a good 6 years. He was like the Taco Bell baby for many years, like because we were working with Taco Bell. He tells his friends, he's like, I was the Taco Bell baby. So like, I very much understand that literal in-house content creation. I love it. And we're so happy that you found somewhere that you're like thrilled to work every day, because it's such a world of difference when you can love that.
I mean, I know, I'm sure we'll get into this, but actually, like, I couldn't have done it if I hadn't had the experience I had leaving my previous place of employment. Like, it was really like a totally different, like, emotional mindset going into that.
This is perfect. So why don't you take us back to the beginning of your Fresh Start story?
Yeah. So it's interesting. When I look back, not to like keep going like deep into the archives, I was like sort of going through this like intense Fresh Start, I realized like I have actually had a Fresh Start. Like, I have a pattern of Fresh Starts. I'm a lot of an astrology girly. I realized like there has been a pattern in my life where it's like every X amount of years that may or may not correspond to a certain like eclipse cycle, I basically am just like, I'm done with this thing I've been building for half a decade. Throw a grenade in the middle of it, walk away, act like it never happened. And that had been my pattern for like a long time. And so, and it like, if I look back at all the dates, I'm always like, oh, that's when I broke up with that friend. Or like, that's when I like quit this. Like the last one before this one was like when I quit the like entertainment industry, decided to start a wedding website or wedding photography company, move across the country and like start this new job. So like, this was very much part of like a cycle, but what happened was over the course of this sort of next stage in my career, I now realize I had like brought into this professional relationship, like a deeply unhealthy part of myself. And basically from like day one, and this is why I'm very much like the energy of the universe, like is always kind of like pushing you in the direction you need to go in.
Yep.
From like day one, the vibes were like a little bit off and I knew it and I ignored it. And really hit the ground building something. Cause I was it was like this like combination of feeling like I finally had a little bit of freedom to like be myself and do what I want. I was working in an environment that was filled with yeses. I was so desperate to prove myself. And I also found myself in this like professional relationship where I was really acting out a lot of patterns, like learned patterns from my childhood. Yeah. And that perfect storm was just like really sucked me into this space where I don't even know how to describe it. I had on these like really intense blinders where I was just like, this is the only thing that matters. This is all I care about. For the next 8 years of my life, I will put my relationships aside. I will put my personal health aside. I will put my well-being aside because like we are going for gold here. And that had sort of like a three-act structure where it was like, it was really great at first. It was like really riding high. I was doing so many fun things. And then it like a third of the way in, sort of the foundation started to crumble a little bit. And like, I don't know if you guys have, I don't know if this has like been a recurring theme, but like, I was just like having these like, not panic attacks, but these like intense emotional outbursts that I couldn't trace. I just like something was like screaming from inside of me, but I was like, I had no idea where it was coming from or why. I joke that like I often would find myself in therapy being like, I need to fix this problem. And like I'd start talking to the therapist, and the therapist would be like, girl, your problem is like way over here. You think it's this, but it's actually this like completely unrelated other thing that you need to go address like right now. And so I just remember I started working there in 2000 and like late 2011, early 2012. Okay. And around 20, like by like the end of 2012, I wasn't sleeping. I was like working until like 2 a.m. every morning, sleeping from like 2 to 4, and then getting up again and working from like 4 to 6, and then like sleeping from like 6 to 8, and just like doing that forever and ever and ever. And I did that for long enough that like I just know that like by 2015, 2016, I was like, wow, I am a mess. And I don't remember like the lead up to a lot of it, but in 2016, I remember having this intense breakdown at work where I just cried all day at work, and I didn't know why. Like, I couldn't pinpoint the source of this like breakdown. And I also I was like, oh, and I had this week where I was like so entrenched in this space where this person that I had like a, and like, just to back it up, like I got so deep that like by the end of the year, I was like this person's kid's godparent. And I was like going on family vacations with them and like spending more time with them than I did my own family. Yeah. And I had this one weekend, I think it was 2016, where like I went to work one day and I was like, I just feel like this person's mad at me. And I don't know if it's because of something I did at work, something I did in my personal life, something that happened over here, because everything was like so intermeshed that like there was no separating anything out. Yeah. And I actually tried to sort of like, it was my first time in my entire life I ever tried to set a boundary. I remember being like, I got into therapy. The therapist was like, hey, do you realize you're codependent? And I was like, what does that mean? So down like this rabbit hole of self-discovery. And I tried to like bring that up to the person and it blew up in my face spectacularly. Mm-hmm. And so I just like pushed that down and was like, oh, this is a me problem. This isn't like an us problem. This is an environmental problem. This is a me. I need to work on myself and I can push through it, because I was so committed to this goal of making this relationship work, making this work environment work. And I also really thought I was going to get a big old payoff at the end of it. And so I was like, push through. And like, there were so many ups and downs throughout the end of that. And then like, you know, I'm like so many like relationships and situations that don't work out. It was just like this build and build and build and build of things that like really weren't working. And the more confident I became in myself, the more obvious that became. And the more I realized like how toxic it was for me to be there. And then I just like hit a breaking point at one day. It was like the simplest thing. It was actually working remotely ended up being like the thing that like out of everything, like the sleepless nights, the like weird fights, the needing to be in therapy, all of that, I was like, I can work through that. But I was like, I'm not going to your goddamn office. Okay, it's just impractical.
Because it becomes a thing where it feels just like a power trip at a certain
100%.
Point. Yeah.
1,000,000%. And I remember trying to be like, this isn't really working out for me. And just like, I don't know, getting the like, well, we can do a trial run of something. And me being like, I've been by your side for 8 years. And you're going to act like I'm some like untrustworthy noob. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. And I just remember being like, I forget. But yeah, I was like, I'm going to get your kids if you die. Like, you can't give me a freaking like remote option twice a week.
Right. That's crazy.
And so that really like, so the fresh start, I feel like really kind of kicked off there. Mm-hmm. And like, I know I'm like, it's really fascinating to me, again, the way that the, like the universe sort of like maneuvers things. I had been like quietly dying inside for a couple of years, like leading up to that. And then because we had like moved into this office, I didn't realize I was signing up for like a 5-day in-office work situation. Mm-hmm. I had like a 45-minute commute with a newborn, right? I was pregnant. And they were like, yeah, we didn't sign a lease for you not to come to the office every day. And I was like, you never made that clear. I work in the office 2 days a week right now. Like, why would I assume I have to be there 5 days a week? And they were like, we're spending $2,200 a month on this lease. Yeah, you have to be here. And I was like, okay, well, that would have been really helpful to know before I started like looking with you. I thought we were just going to have like a fun place to play a couple times a week. And then like, I took on this huge project that I decided I wanted to do. So that's on me. And again, like all with a newborn, first year of my kid's life. So I'm working more than I have in forever. And then after literally like 2 weeks after that, and like the swirl of codependency went even deeper. Like this person was having really intense, like familial, like genuine, like stuff going on in their family. And I remember trying to be like, I don't know if I can be your work person and your personal person right now. I have my own family I need to take care of. And like just feeling like I couldn't actually commit to that because I knew I was going to get like punished one way or another if I didn't show up in this space 100% and if I didn't show up in that space 100%. And just like feeling, and then also feeling like I needed to caretake this person's emotions while undergoing that. Which again, like I've learned enough to know that like that is partly them, but it is also on me, right? If you feel responsible for somebody else's emotions, like that is something you're bringing to the equation.
But they gladly accepted it.
100%. They're like, yes, look it up. And at the end of that, our office ended up getting robbed. Like literally like 3 weeks later.
I remember.
And I remember everybody else being so upset, right? It was like a real violation and me being so relieved because I was like, oh, like it was actually funny. They robbed us once. And I remember being like we were like, all right, well, we'll be back to the office on Monday. They robbed us again the next day. And we were like, well, we can't stay here. It's not safe. Like if they go so bold that they can rob us twice in 1 weekend. And I was like, oh my God, thank God for that second robbery because now I'm free of this place. And I started to like imagine a life for myself where I was like, I could start to break away a little bit. I could have some independence. And then like we just fell back into that same old, like, I need to control what you're doing to feel like. I mean, there was just, I think, a control element where it was like, having too much independence, this person felt like they had to rein it back in. And yeah, after like 6 months of that and some like, just like stupid power struggles, I was like, I'm done. But I really am like, I feel like the universe tried to like throw me a bone. They were like, yeah, we're gonna screw this up for
It
you and
usually does. The universe
let it
knows what it's
restart
doing.
itself.
I mean, I had such a similar, and I've suspected this for a long time about that person and my old boss, such a similar experience at my job in tech in the city of like even the little things like the office and the new office. And I found the new office because he asked me to find it. And then when it was expensive or when the real estate agent did, well, I found the new office with his real estate agent, even though I offered many real estate agents. Because my dad's a real estate attorney in the city. When he found out I knew the real estate agent through my family, just by coincidence, and the real estate agent fucked anything up, he blamed me. He was like complaining to me about it. And then when anything would go wrong with the place that I found, it was my fault. Why did it, like, and he was mad at me. And I was like, I can't really track what's going on. And I still like, I call that like one of my worst breakups. Like it feels like a breakup. The way that we relate to each other feels like a breakup. I, you know, like when he sees my stories now, it's like when Andre sees my stories, it's like, oh, that's weird. Why is that ex looking at my stories? And it's a very, the boundaries thing of like trying to set a boundary. And then, you know, he would say to me, like, why do you answer my text messages late at night? Like, you don't need to do that. That's not, you need to set boundaries. And I go, okay, I won't answer your text messages. And then the next time he would say, why didn't you answer my text message? And I'd be like, I can't do this. And it was the same thing where I was like, I knew that the vibes were off immediately. I knew something was weird. And I kept going.
So let's go back a little bit. Talk to us about kind of your childhood a little bit, because you had some stuff happen in your childhood that I'm curious how much that trauma played into the codependency that you had in the work situation.
All of it. I actually remember being with this therapist who's so great and like sitting down and being like, here's what's going on with me. Like the source of my codependency is this, and this is how I'm acting it out right now. I'm trying to work through it. And she was like, okay, well that tracks. And so basically like what happened was I am the oldest of five. My younger sister was diagnosed with cancer when I was 11. She was eight. She died a little less than a year later. And I immediately anointed myself like the emotional caretaker of the family. Because I had a very different response to her passing than most of my other family members. Like, I don't know what happened in the old noggin up here, but my brain was like, this happened to somebody else. You're not gonna like grieve, you're not gonna feel a feeling, you are gonna just disassociate, and it's gonna
I
come up
mean, what else
later.
could you have done?
That was my only option.
You
And
could
so
have combusted. I mean, like, I don't know.
like I sometimes look back and I'm like, I must have looked like a tiny sociopath because I was like, I'm fine, this is fine, what even happened here? But my family was like falling apart. And that was actually really, really hard for me to grapple with because, like, my mom was grieving so intensely. My siblings were, I was 12. So my youngest sibling was 2 years old. My brother was three. And my other sister, who was really close to my sister who passed away, was eight. And, like, my parents, spent a couple of years, losing a child, I think, has like a 92% divorce rate. It's just an insurmountable grief for most couples. And so I was like, I need to hold all this together because it's falling apart and I feel like I can handle that. And I also gained my self-worth felt like it came from that being able to make somebody else happy in that situation is how I then learned to derive my self-worth. And so I became a helper. One of the most fascinating things I think actually through this experience is that I don't know. I'm like, let me just bring up all the personality tests.
All of it.
My Enneagram went from like a 2 to a 5 after this breakup because I
Interesting.
had been a helper for so long. Like I identified as somebody who, and that's like actually honestly, I can tell immediately in this next relationship because what, like, and I had then carried that through, like, all those friend breakups that came on my, like, breakup cycle was me being like, let you're a hot mess, let me fix you. And like that actually happened with my when we moved out to California, I was like, I don't want to be in California by
I
myself,
remember.
with nobody. And so we took my husband's best friend from Maine because he like hadn't come out to his family yet. He was like living at his mom's, and we were like, come live with us for free. And I made it my project. He didn't ask for any of that. He was like, I was fine in my mom's basement, didn't ask for shit. And I was like, no, we're going to move out to California. You're going to come out to your family. You're going to get a boyfriend. You're going to get a job. And when he like didn't rise to the occasion, I was so resentful because like, I was like, I am doing all of this for you and you're not grateful. You're not holding up your end of the bargain. And like, how can you not see everything I'm putting into this? Which is like, that is like the most classic, I think, codependency example that there is the like overcommitting yourself, then feeling resentful for it and like punishing people for it.
I have a question.
Yeah.
And I this comes from a lot of assumptions, so you can correct me. Michael doesn't seem like he's ever really been broken like that. And so is that why like this relationship has been able to last, you think? Because like he's not a person that needs fixing?
Michael, no, Michael actually, when I met him, I was like, wow, this is such an emotionally stable person. He was the first person who took, I mean, not the first. I have a great family. Like, we were going through, obviously, like really intense
Of
circumstances, but
course.
I also, like, right, I was like, I had teen parents. I was shuffled from house to house a lot as a kid. Like, this was the first person who just was like the emotional. I used to joke, he was, we not call him emotionally stable, but I used to call him emotionally flatlined because he's just like, ee. Like
He's
there's no,
very calm.
he's so calm. But at, what's interesting is he's so calm, he's so stable. I just remember being like, when like shit was going down in my family, like my mom had like a, my mom was like decided to get mad about something. Like one day I think she was like, you're, like I call you and you never answer your cell phone. And I was like, well then fine, I'll get my own line. And I was like, Michael was like, we'll take you to the Verizon, we'll put you on my plan. He was always just like, I got you, babe. But at the same time, he was actually going through like a similar family, like his parents were going through a divorce. His dad ended up being diagnosed with like a latent onset mental illness that like really shook his family. And so he actually, I think, might have been a little bit like he took on the caretaker role because he was like,
Interesting.
and he's older than me. So like
Oh, I
that
didn't
was like,
realize that.
yeah, he's 3 years, like he's like 3 years older than me, 2 grades ahead of me.
Okay, that makes sense.
So I was like, this is, and this actually ended up coming out as like a later thing. Like we had to like therapy our way out of where I was like, he sort of ended up being this like caretaker role, which also became like sort of an authority figure that we had to like undo in our marriage later when I was like, I am a whole ass woman and I need to stop looking at you like you're the boss. And he was like, I didn't ask for that either. But yeah, no, very stable, doesn't need fixing. And I just like our relationship, I have a friend who has the same birthday as me, and our paths are so similar. But I always joke that I'm like, she's like, her sort of codependency journey is in like romantic relationships. Mine are always friendships. I don't know
Oh,
what kind of like
interesting.
weird karmic thing is going on. Romance, never been a problem.
It's your witch wound.
Wait, it's my witch wound, 100%. And that's, I think, because, right, like I, it, like my, the relationship I was most codependent in was with my mom. So it's obviously I would like glom onto a female
No,
authority figure.
right.
And yeah, and that's just like, it's such an easy, it's just like such a straight line from
And I
like
mean,
one to the other.
and I say this from an older sister perspective, not to say this bluntly, but you couldn't save your sister.
Oh no. Yeah.
Right? And
Right.
so there's a wound there of like, you have to, and I say this from my own perspective, save the world because you can't save like one person, right?
Right.
So I'm wondering, like, when you were talking, and like the relationship between these breakdowns at work, but this codependent relationship, and the grief that you had about losing your sister, was there a relationship between them about finally letting something go?
You know, what it actually came down with for me, came down to was that it was less because I was so far removed from the actual grief of losing my sister. What happened to me in that moment was I did not respond appropriately to that. I was acting selfishly. I was thinking of myself. I was self-absorbed in the moment. And that like label really stuck with me. And I then felt like I needed to apologize for that for so long that I was like, never put yourself first, never be selfish, never be self-absorbed, always put somebody else's suffering in front of your own. Because if you don't, because that's my core wound is feeling like I am a bad person if I come first, if I'm worried
Yeah, we
about
know nothing about that here.
I'm
Nothing.
sure.
I mean, that's like big
That's
sister, like that's oldest sister shit, and then added upon, right? Like that's
Yeah.
like it's big sister shit, and then trauma, like that fed it, like
Yeah.
completely it like fed it and like validated that wrong supposition.
Yeah. It's so deep that, like, when I started at this job and in this relationship, very shortly after I started, this person got pregnant, and in the beginning of parenthood was just like struggling in the way that so many parents do. Like, I think her baby might have been colicky. And I was like, oh, I'm great with kids. Let me come over and babysit. You go to a hotel, I'll spend the night at your house. Which, like, if I did that to my boss now, she'd be like, I think maybe you need to seek out professional help. That is a completely unhealthy boundary. She'd be like, I truly don't want you to know where I live.
It's true though, right? Like there's supposed to be some sort of professional boundary there. And it's hard, especially like where you were. It was a small startup, basically. So you're already lack of boundaries, but that is intense.
When you have two people, I think, whose core wounds are like a beautiful yin yang, you can really just do some like major damage to each other. And that's what I think that's what happened here, right? It was like I was so willing to give of myself. And this person was like, yes,
So
I need
hungry.
that. I need that. Because I think their core wound was around not being taken care of and always being sort of the like third in line, you know? And so that like, and like when I look back, some of the like major red flags, other than the like, let me come sleep at your house and take care of your kid, even though like I've known you for 8 months and I work for you. It's like other little things where I suppressed like the thing I should have known from day one that I'm always like, why did I not see this as a red flag? As I had moved out to California, there was a big network of people associated with this brand. And I ended up hitting it off with somebody who also worked for the website part-time immediately. It was such a core, like, like I was just like, wow, we are kindred spirits. And I remember mentioning this out loud and getting a response that felt very like, no, because they were also friends. And it was like, I remember them being like, oh, well, that person has like weird relationships with people. They like pick weird friends. And I was like, oh, I just immediately got the sense like, you are not allowed to be friends with this person because I am friends with this person. And if you two are hanging out and I'm not in the equation, that breaks the rules. And I spent the next 6 years hiding, lying about when I would like see this person because I was afraid. Again, of what? Like there were no real consequences, but in my head, I was like, this person can never be mad at you. If this person is mad at you, you haven't done your job, you have failed.
Which
And
is
I'm
like a
sure that
mommy
that,
issue
but
thing
yeah, and I'm
too.
sure that person made your work life
difficult too, even not in an aggressive way, but in a passive aggressive way.
Yeah.
If they were mad at you.
There would definitely be unspoken punishments for stepping out of line. Mm-hmm. But again, like I would, you know, there was also like an element of gaslighting where I was like, did I do something? And it would be like, you're bringing into the workplace. And so like, I should have recognized that. But like at the time I was just like, again, trying so hard to never be somebody who could be disliked. Mm-hmm. That was mission critical.
This became your family, right? Like, so you are mimicking the same actions you did with your birth family, trying to hold it all together with trying to hold this family, quote unquote, together at work as well.
Yeah. And once I got in, I was just like, you know, again, I was like, oh, I just got in too deep and I couldn't extricate myself. And I was so committed to that. The like deeper I dug myself, the more sort of like committed to it I got. Cause I was like, no, I need to make this work. I have gone all in.
Right.
I just couldn't. Right. I was like, what? All my friends are here. My self-worth was so wrapped up in my career and in my job that just like the thought of abandoning that felt really threatening on like a visceral level. Until I went to therapy because I had been having these breakdowns and truly did not know why. And the therapist was like, listened to me tell one story and was like, I'm going to give you a book about codependency. I would love to clarify, cause I feel like, I don't know if you guys have got, like delved into it, but like, I feel like codependency is one of those words that gets thrown around a lot. It's like, oh, you rely too much on your partner, you're codependent, but it's like, that aspect of like, feeling responsible for somebody else's emotions is how I've always defined codependency. And she's like, you are classic, go buy this book, go read it. And it really unlocked something for me. And I think transformed how I saw myself. Because I think part of what it took to then break that habit was, you know, part of being codependent is that you are both the caretaker and the victim, right? Like you are resentful because nobody appreciates what you're doing. Mm-hmm. And part of breaking that cycle is having to take responsibility for the role that you play in your own suffering. Mm-hmm. And that I think was something I had to reconcile with, right? I had to be like, well, nobody asked me to do any of these things. I volunteered willingly. The fact that somebody said yes is not my response. Like, it's not my fault, but it is my responsibility, you know, to own up to that. And so I had to then figure out how to do the scariest thing, which was when I say that my fresh start was an internal one, right? It's like, yeah, on paper, what I did was like, had a friendship breakup and I left my job. Internally, what I did was I finally gave myself permission to be somebody who was unliked, which is something I had never done before and was like the scariest thing I could have imagined. Yeah. And that took a lot of baby steps. And I can tell you, it took from 2016 to 2019. Cause I remember the first time I tried to set that boundary and I remember the day I walked out the door and feeling like a genuinely transformed human being, but it took a little bit of like, can I try this? No.
Essentially you went through a divorce.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. I remember us talking about this when I left, being like, because I think you were going through your divorce at like the same exact time.
Yep.
And us talking and you being like, no, these are like kind of overlapping experiences. And that feeling so validating to me, because I was like, friendship breakups do not get a lot of airplay.
They don't.
And if you asked Michael, right, like if you were inside my relationship at the time, he'd be like, yeah, I saw Maddie like for an hour a day. And this relationship got 40 plus hours of my time during the week at work, plus a third of my social hours at least outside of work. Mm-hmm. Like, I think the year that I left, what really eventually drove me out was I think I had spent like 30% of my weekends at like work events. And I was just like, I have no life. I have nothing for myself. And obviously, like, the catalyst of having a baby was I also just like, I had no patience for it anymore. The first time I tried to sort of break away a little bit, I think I got pregnant like a month later. So it was clearly like, I'm trying to do this thing. And then when I finally like made the split, it was because like I'd had a baby and I just didn't have I could treat myself like shit, but I'm not going to treat my kid like shit.
Well, I was going to say that so much of, because I also, my marriage was codependent in that way as well, right? I was the caretaker and the victim and the whole thing. So much of my journey was also when I was, the reason I said it was like a divorce is because of a divorce, you have no choice, but somebody hates you off the bat and you just have to accept it, right? Somebody fucking hates you. They live in the world. That's, it is what it is. Go build a company around it. And so, but with divorce and with codependency, you also are giving yourself permission to feel joy
Oh, yeah.
and to find
Yeah.
joy. And I remember after, going through my divorce, literally my therapist would say to me, well, what makes you happy? What brings you joy? I couldn't have listed one thing, right? And so I feel like so much of of breaking free from that codependency. And from with you moved from a codependent daughter to a codependent coworker and friend, right?
Yep.
And so how did you find yourself in that, like coming out of that tunnel as a new mother, as a wife, kind of, figuring your shit out? Obviously you had therapy, but what were the little things you did to kind of heal during that time?
You know, I remember like in the process being like, I need to find things for myself that are just for me. I actually, you know, when a big thing was I started like reconnecting with old friends. I think just
Yes.
having, I had to build a network for myself where like if I was going to just like fall, I needed a safety network. Or I needed a safety net.
Yeah.
And so I actually, it's funny, that same best friend from college, the one who talked me through the mistake of applying to the wrong major
Which
is,
I'd like to say that was such a sort of astute way of handling it for an 18-year-old, a 17-year-old, to be like, well, let's look at the courses and see what's
she
interesting.
is a gem. Like a, she's like still like my person. And yeah, I remember just being like, it's funny. I remember just like re another magical thing, actually. No, the universe threw her back into my orbit. She had been in San Francisco. I had been in California. I'd been out there for like 4 or 5 years, and we lived an hour away from each other. This is the person I spent like every single day in fourth, fifth, sixth grade after school with, like in her basement, like watching Beaches. And like we just like never reconnected. And then one night I went out to dinner with my former friend slash coworker and the other friend who we weren't supposed to hang out with, and we would have to have like a second dinner afterwards where we could just like enjoy the company of each other. And I was on the way home from that second dinner, and I was literally driving my hatchback, and my best friend from childhood walks in a crosswalk across from me, and I rolled down my window and I was like, hello, is that you? And she was like, oh my God. She was like, we're going to a dance party. Do you want to come with us? And me, who is like, oh, it's 8:30 and I live an hour away, like I need to go home and go to bed. I was like, you know what, sure. And that night I actually didn't end up, classic mom, you can't like unmom a mom. Ended up going, like we waited in line, we never got in, her friends got antsy, and I was like, at a certain point she was like, I need to go back to the dance party. And I was like, I have a hatchback, let me take your friends home and you go enjoy your evening. And she was like, okay. So I took her friends home, dropped them off, and that night she met her wife. And they've been
Oh.
like married since. And I just was like, thank you. 'Cause she ended up being like, I remember one time, part of what sort of like started to make me realize what was happening. It was the combination of building something for myself and starting to recognize the way that this person was trying to separate me from healthy
Yeah,
relationship, right?
it's a
Like
narcissistic emotional thing.
tactic, yeah.
I
Tactic, yeah.
remember them trying to be like, always were very anti-Michael, never liked Michael.
Ugh.
I know, which people are like,
Who
excuse
can't,
me.
who doesn't like
Also,
my.
the audacity to come into somebody's life in their 20s and be like, your partner that you've been with since you were 16, that you have a great relationship with, not for me. Like, go fuck yourself.
Right. And I remember they tried
Like,
to say something.
that's somebody that doesn't care about making friends, right? Or
No.
like that doesn't care about like
No.
social mores. Like, it's
And
very weird.
they just didn't like him because he was like not impressed. He was like, okay.
Right. He
I'm
saw
sure
through the
he saw
bullshit.
right through it. Yeah.
Yeah.
From day one was like, no, this person is not for me. And I
Yeah.
hope not for you either. And I was like, psych, for me forever.
I love
And
them.
then I remember this person like kind of tried to be like, yeah, so Michael. And Christina was like, excuse me, I've known this man since I was No, my mom had him in third grade, like as his teacher. You're not going to tell me that this guy is not a gem of a human being.
Yeah.
Get out of here with that nonsense. And so just like slowly building up that support network so that I like could feel comfortable. I really had to get to a place where I was like,
Yeah.
if this implodes, because it will, I
Yeah.
just was like, there's no way this goes like gently into that good night. This is going to be, this is going to be like an
Yeah.
atomic bomb. I need to know that I have
Yeah.
enough of myself that I'm going to be okay.
Yeah.
And so that was a huge help. And also it did take, it took a couple of people being like, I remember I was just showing up to work. I spent at a 45-minute commute every day on the way to work. I would just have to hype myself up and be like, if this person says something to you, walk in the door and you feel like you're gonna cry, don't cry. Like that
Yeah.
was, I was like, I just was like, steel yourself. And I was such a grump. I was a horrible person to be around. I remember one of my coworkers being like, you need to figure this out because I don't want to be around this. She was like, the two of you need to figure out whatever the hell's going on with you. And I had a coach, and my coach was like, I think so. What ended up happening was this person could sense something was going on. I was unhappy. I was bringing it to work every day. And I think what happened was, I think they thought they could like a little bit strong arm me into fix, because it was always like, you have to fix yourself. You need to work on this because you're making the environment uncomfortable. And I was like, okay, I'm a good girl. I'm going to do that. And this time, I remember being on that call, and this poor business coach trying to like mediate, like being like, what's going on? It seems like something's going on with you. And I just remember just like vomiting the words out, like, I think I don't want to do this anymore. And that conversation set me free. Those were like the most powerful words I think I have ever spoken.
Yeah.
And everything after that spiraled exactly the way I could have written it. I could have just like prophesized it. It unfolded
Yeah.
precisely as I envisioned it. And also from
Yeah.
that moment on, I just remember being like, nothing can touch me. The worst thing that could happen has happened. Like, she's mad at me. She hates
Yeah.
me. And also, she can't touch me. I then, for the first time, had the I had had the upper hand the entire time, which is what I didn't realize,
Yeah.
right? When somebody is trying to suppress your power, it's because they know you have the upper hand and they are desperately hoping you don't
Terrified.
figure it out. Because if
Yeah.
you figure it out, you're gonna take your, you know, you're gonna like take your rocks and go. I think there's an actual saying that I've
I was
butchered,
gonna say you need to
but
get
you
like
take
that
your toys and
tattooed.
go, maybe.
No, it's such a important lesson that people don't realize.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anytime somebody tries to make you feel like you need that you owe them something, it's because they're afraid of you leaving them.
My old boss once was talking to me about another employee that had left, and he was like, "Can you believe she unfriended me on Facebook? I can't believe it. Why would she unfriend me on Facebook?" And I was just like, "Oh, noted. That's the worst thing I can apparently do to him." And so
Right?
I'm still friends with him. I'm like, I'm just waiting, because apparently that's like the thing that upsets you the most in the world, is that somebody would unfriend you on Facebook.
Oh my
But it
God.
was the same thing. It was like, I've since learned you're not supposed to cry at work. Not like in a career sense, but like work isn't supposed to make you cry.
No, I actually, that has been I was just saying to Michael the other day, I was like, I've had a couple of days. I think I've had one day where I just got so overwhelmed I cried.
Yeah.
But like, I have not cried at work in, what is it, over 3 years. I've never cried at work. I have had no reason to. I don't go into performance reviews feeling like I'm gonna get blindsided. I just don't like, it's just my, when I actually, when I started my current job, my friends joked that it was like I was cosplaying at having a job, because I was like, look at me doing work and caring. Because I just like given so much of myself for so long that like
Yeah.
having any sort of other energy felt like I was like playing a role.
Yeah.
What happened after that, though, I will say, was like so, it was like the universe was like, good job, you did the thing, and now we're gonna reward you and test you at the same time. Like, the I couldn't, like, you couldn't like plot out the next steps. If you first, I couldn't say anything for a while because I was like, I had this public facing role. We needed to wait to like publicly announce it. And so I couldn't really tell anybody except for like the five people who sort of were familiar with this career I had and were
Yeah.
really in the inner circle. I messaged one girl who used to work for us and who had left Under kind of, like, I felt guilty about how she left because I feel like we kind of like had strong-armed her out because I had succumbed to some like pressure to, to like do a departure I wasn't fully behind. And I messaged her and I was like, I'm leaving. And like 2 weeks later, she was like, so we're hiring at my company. And it's a role, like, it was like I could have just copied and pasted my skills into that role and then taken away like 75% of the responsibility. And that was, and I was like, no, I was like, I'm not interested. Like, I'm burned out. I just went through this like really emotionally stressful experience. Like, I'm not trying to have a job for a little while. And I was like, also, I'm not commuting. And then 2 weeks later, she was like, so I talked to the hiring manager and like they were willing to make it a remote job. And I was like, fine, I'll apply, I guess. And on my last day at my job, I got the job offer for my new one. As I was like closing out all my accounts and saying my goodbyes, I got the job offer. And it felt like such a like the timing was so
That's because you're a
right.
witch. Because
Because
you're a
I'm like,
witch.
we brought full witchcraft to this. And then it was really interesting. The like, so when we had this like breakup, this person was, we were like really still trying to like hold it together. Like this person was like, I'm incredibly hurt by you because you decided to leave. I can't believe, I feel so blindsided. Oh my God. But like, let's try to make it work. Cause I was still her kid's godparent. And I, we both were like, we sunk cost fallacy. We were like, we put so much into this. We can't just like abandon it now. And I was like, okay. Even though, again, in my gut, I was like, whoa, every time I talk to you, I feel like a little bit stressed out. And so we went on with this for, a couple of months. And there were a couple of like, again, me trying to like stretch my like wings a little bit. Like she had this like party to like honor her like marriage, her like 10 years of marriage. And I sat at like the punishment table next to like her mom and her mother-in-law. And so I was like, fuck this. I'm gonna have an edible. Which did not go well for me. And I remember being really mad about that later. Like she was like, you ruined my party with your like, and I was like, you didn't even know what was happening. And like, so just like taking little steps of being like, I feel like a teenager because I never rebelled as a teenager. My codependent self wouldn't allow it. And so I was like, I'm just gonna rebel a little. And then but like it got so like once I was out and could see the absurdity of it, right? Like in it, I was like, oh my God, all of this is so serious, right? If she says this, it's real. Out of it, looking in through the windows, I was like, this is bananas. And I don't know how anybody would ever let themselves be subjected to it. Like the big red flag for me a couple months into it was I was like, well, I still need to hold it together for the kids because I do, like, I love her kids. And so I would like, I would like liaise with her husband to be like, oh, I'll take the kids for the day, right? She still like was not couldn't talk to me. She was like too hurt to talk to me. And so I remember taking the kids one day. I think her husband had dropped them off. It was a 45-minute drive, 30, 40-minute drive. Her husband had dropped them off, and I was like, I'll take them back to you. It's a long ride. And then I got to the house. I remember they had big bay windows, and I remember pulling up to the curb and seeing her behind the bay windows. And when I had gotten out of my car, the curtains were closed. And wouldn't come to the front door. Husband came to retrieve the kids. It was so dramatic for
Such
no
a good
reason.
divorce.
It
Oh,
was
the
like a
drama. I mean,
divorce.
I was gonna say too, like a divorce is a divorce because it is the pulling apart of a relationship, a romantic or whatever relationship, a platonic relationship, and financials. And so like when you quit your job and lose your best friend, right? Like your financial situation was affected by it. So it like really was in every aspect a divorce, and you were still taking the kids every other weekend.
I
So
still had like partial custody. And I just remember being like, this is so, I was like, I am trying so hard to be the bigger person, and this
so
is so
goofy.
petty, so
Well,
goofy, so silly.
she knew that you were coming. Like sh
Right.
I yeah.
I can't. So then, oh God, not a month and a half, 2 months later, I got a book deal. I got offered, a publisher dropped into my
I was
DMs.
gonna ask.
Never ever happens, I think, ever, but it happened to me. This publisher was like, hey, we found your work online. We love it. Do you want to write this book? And I was like, I do. It is going to, that is the real grenade.
Yeah.
I was like, this is going to destroy everything. It is, if there was any hope for like maintaining this relationship, this is gonna erase that. And I remember having a conversation with a couple friends where I was like, A, am I willing to burn every professional bridge I have? Because I was like, I know this person will, I've been in the room enough with this person
Yeah.
burning bridges with other people that I knew there would be a
Yeah.
narrative spun around me that I would not be able to defend myself against, because you can't, right? You can't be like, no, that's actually not me, because it just makes you look guilty.
Yeah, like a
You have
divorce.
like a divorce. You just have to be like confident enough in yourself to know that that's not who you are.
Yeah.
And so I remember one of my friends being like, first of all, she's not every professional connection you have in the industry, Maddie, you dummy. And then I also remember her being like, I remember one point I'd said to something like, my like biggest fear is that I will outshine this person, right? Like, because that was like one of the rules I couldn't break. I could never be shinier. I could never be prettier. I could never
Which is
have a favorite
insane
outfit.
because you are the shiniest, most amazing person. But that's why they selected you to say, you can never be shinier than me.
Can I pause this for one second?
Yeah.
Sorry, I feel like I might be ill. Hold on. Okay,
You
well,
okay? The trauma.
I've not barfed since I was pregnant, but I think my body was like, purge it, babe. Purge the experience from your body.
It's our magic. We make people do
I
that.
am like, sometimes when you're a witch, like what goes around comes around. You
You
can't
have to
control.
get it out. Well,
Yep.
we won't take much more of your time.
No, it's
So
okay. I feel great now.
that was so funny. I thought you were gonna be like, Michael needs me. You're like, I'm gonna be sick.
I was like a little off coming on, but I was like, it's fine. Like sometimes you just, your tummy's not doing 100%, but I was like, it's fine. I'll just power through.
Well, I'm
Nope.
glad you're feeling better.
I'm sorry.
I was very curious about the book because I was wondering where that played into it. And
Oh, yeah.
I think Olivia and I have both had experiences with people where you're not allowed to be bigger than them,
Yeah.
or brighter than them, or shinier than them. And they do pick you because you are so bright. And it's fun to make somebody dull themselves when they're the brightest thing in the room. It's
Yeah.
fun for them.
That has been, I think, a recurring theme in actually every single like major friend breakup I've had, is that I, not to like toot my own horn, but like I make people feel good in proximity.
Yeah.
I'm like, I got a good energy. I
I
know
mean,
I'm
I got naked in front of you, so I definitely
I
understand
mean,
that.
Maddie didn't even ask you to.
She didn't even ask.
It just
The goats were
happened.
there. They were some good shots.
But it's like, and with people who are really like ready to accept and want that for themselves, it turns
Yeah.
into beautiful relationships,
Yeah.
right? When you can just feed off of each other's good vibes, like it's great. When you do that with an insecure person, it ends up being this very tenuous thing where it's like,
Yeah.
hey, right? There's a finite amount of sparkle, and they
Yeah.
have to make sure you never have more than they do.
Yeah.
And this
Yeah.
friend was like, this would be the most sort of like, this would be the most sort of like outshining this person in their space.
Because to be clear, I just want listeners to know the book was going to be about the same industry that you had Yeah.
both been
Yeah.
in.
Wedding industry. We said it was
Yeah.
wedding industry. You didn't mention the most important thing about the book, though.
Which I'm like, what is the
That
most?
I contributed
Oh
to.
my God, I don't
By
even know
the way, you
what
even mentioned it. I was
it
like, I think I contributed to that. I like, don't
is. You did. You
remember
made my
at all.
acknowledgments. I'm sorry.
It's
That
late.
is in
No,
a.
it's not that it's late. It's that I just literally forgot I did it. Like,
Literally.
it feels like it was a lifetime
I was gonna
ago.
say that chapter feels so close.
Yeah.
And so I was like, okay, if I do this, I really need to be ready to accept all of the consequences. And I
Right.
need to be willing. Like, if step one was willing to be unliked, step two was making myself available to be the villain in somebody's story.
To be clear, the book has very good ratings on Amazon. So,
Yes, thanks for stirring somebody's
also, I was
soul.
gonna say, that person I believe has written a book, but it's also the difference of being asked. You were asked to write a book.
Yeah, it's fascinating because I was like, I didn't, right? I didn't put this out there. I wasn't
No.
like trying to do anything. I really do genuinely believe that my lesson, I know this is so woo-woo, but like my lesson
No.
hadn't been learned all the way yet.
Right.
And so the universe was like, okay, bitch, like you want to half-ass this?
Right.
We're gonna like go full throttle on your lesson.
Yeah.
Here's an opportunity. Here's like the like single easiest yes you could ever give, but it comes with a caveat that someone's gonna hate you for it. They're gonna hate
Yeah.
you for it, and they might make your life challenging, and you're gonna have to like live with that. And so ultimately, like, with the guidance of, some friends who's, who I really trusted, I was like, all right, I can say yes to this. I did have to do a ton of due diligence because I was like, listen up, publishers, like this person's not gonna be happy about this.
Right.
They're probably gonna accuse me of plagiarism, stealing.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not going to plagiarize, but I know they're gonna throw everything they have at me.
Yeah.
I knew from working there for so long that like they could be a little bit litigious, and I was afraid of that. And so I was like, I just need to make sure what I learned through this process is that, you can protect yourself against all sort of retribution, but if you keep your side of the street clean,
Yeah.
like that was part of the reason I haven't even talked about this before is because I just never want any speculation. I never want to feed into any drama because really, really what I ultimately wanted, and I'm sure you understand this, it's like to always go back to the divorce metaphor, it's like, I just want freedom. I don't want to
Liberation.
bad mouth anybody. I don't want anybody's reputation tarnished. I truly just wanted to be free to live outside of the anxiety I felt being in this situation, right? Like, I just
Yeah.
wanted to live a goddamn life.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, so I. Luckily, so yeah, I was like, I need to keep my side of the street clean.
Right.
So like, and I did, like I was like, I'm gonna tell this person about the book deal before it becomes public. They were like, I demand to see, not demand, but they were like, if you're a good person, you'll show me an advanced copy. I showed them an
No.
advanced copy. They
Advanced
were
copy.
like,
Okay.
you stole every word from me. And like, had to like put some like lawyers in touch, and like I think, because I had crossed my T's and dotted my I's, like they did not get the answer they were hoping for because I had
Yeah.
been like, they're going to accuse me of this. Please be prepared. And that was precisely what happened. And so like the book happened. All of that unfolded precisely as expected. And what was really interesting in this process is I also learned another really important lesson in the like world of breakups, which is it was the hardest part of this was actually like I had spent so much of my decade waking up and engaging with this person, right? Like first I started out as like a reader of their content, then I was an employee. And so like I could not divorce myself from wanting to know what was like going on in their world. Because there was a little part of me that had
Just
that.
like divorce. I mean, that's
Yeah, right. I
just
was like, who are
so
you dating
weird.
now?
Yeah, it's just so weird to like not know. I mean, I was with Andre for 10 years and now we're obviously not together anymore. And it's just weird. Like everyone, maybe every like 6 months, I'm like, I have no idea what's going on in his life, and that's weird.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was like not 100% like above board. I was like, I'm gonna look at your Instagram, whatever, whatever. And at one point I was like, all right, this is really unhealthy for
Not
me.
good for me.
And so I did a spell. I was like, I want to absolve myself of curiosity from this person. And so like I did like a little like, like cut some pictures in half, we lit some candles. And I thought what was gonna happen was that I was gonna transform internally, and what ended up happening was they blocked me on social media 2 weeks later, and I was like, oh, okay, I got what I wanted.
Fascinating. It goes back to
It,
being a witch. Everything
I,
comes
it,
back to
right,
being a witch.
it's
It's a witch, but it's not in the way you expected.
it's
No.
never the way you have to be very specific, and
Very
it
specific.
happened a second time. So the second time was I was like, later, I think I was like, I just need to cut ties entirely. Like, it's not enough to absorb myself of curiosity. I need to cut the bond with this person
Yeah.
altogether. And I did one more spell. I remember I did a spell to release ourselves from each other. I was like, we just need to release ourselves. And what ended up happening was on, I will never forget this, on the day, because this had all been like, at a certain point, I was like, I'm just not responding to your emails anymore. I can't,
Right.
like,
They were still emailing you?
I was getting emails like from, let's see, I wrote the book contract, or I got the book contract in like Offer came in like September, October. Contract was signed in December. I told them in like March. They, saw the advance or February, March. It was pre-pandemic, very end of February, I told them. And like the first draft was due like mid-April. So like this is all happening like in the midst of the pandemic. And from like roughly like that February to like April, I was getting a lot of like, if basically like if you can live with yourself, like here's how you can make this better.
Passive aggressive threatening emails.
So many. And I was like, I'm just like, I don't care anymore. So I remember just being like, if you want to talk about this in person, we can. Otherwise, like, sorry. And then eventually I just got to the point where I was like, forward the email to the publisher's lawyers and let them talk it out. Which, as like narcissists hate when you ignore them. That's the worst thing that you can do. I don't want to
It's
like label somebody, but it was very much like that behavior. And so on the day of the, I know I said something about the eclipses earlier. All of these things like started happening like across the course of like these Cancer Capricorn eclipses, which is my transformative period, on the day of that like final Cancer eclipse in I think it was June of 2020. I went to my mailbox and I opened up a letter. I had a PO box, so I went to the PO box and I opened up a letter. It was a 4-page typed breakup letter in the mail, being like, I can't believe you do this to me. Obviously, we are no longer friends. Obviously, you're no longer my kid's godmother. Our partners can't really be friends anymore, and that's sad for them. I hope you're happy with yourself, basically. Hope this was worth the cheap paycheck. Goodbye. I will never speak again. And that was like really the end of it. That was the like, And by then, it was like, it was funny because by then I had been so like, I was like, I just didn't care anymore. Like I, when, it did take a long time to not want to like get a little peek at the inside of their lives because I had committed myself to it so fully for so long.
Of course.
And I won't lie, like there's a shitty part of myself that's kind of like, how are you doing? That I don't want to feed into.
It's
But
human.
it's like, it was like the pandemic. I was trying to like survive with my family and like not lose my mind inside my house. And like over the course of those next 6 months, like Michael and I actually like Michael and I like we bought a camper van, we drove across the country a bunch of times, we bought a house in Maine in August of that year. Like we started making the transformations we would never have been able to do if I hadn't like taken that first step. And it's like all the things that I knew, like I knew I wanted to be in Maine part-time, I knew I was never going to be able to do it in that relationship. Like I remember having moments where it was like I was trying to like go home to fly to see my family who I saw like twice a year, and it was like I'd have to like miss her kid's birthday and she'd be like, oh. And I was like, I want to see my mom. Like you can't be mad at me about this because I'm not your like
That's not friendship. Like, that's not even good friends. Like,
no, it's a hostage
that's a
situation.
wife.
Yes, it's
Like,
a hostage
that's like
situation.
a wife, and it's not a great wife, is really what it is.
It just so like I just remember being like once I was done, I was like, I can go wherever I want and do whatever I want, and nobody's gonna make me feel like I'm a shitty person because I decided to take my life in a direction that works for me. And I do remember like when I like had that job interview for the job I have now, being like, these are the things that I was just remember being brutally honest, being like, I'm not interested, like just being like, I'm really burned out. I think I would be a great fit for this job, but I'm so burned out and I don't know if I'm ready to take on a full-time role right now. I definitely am not ready for a commute. Like, and the response from this person being like, oh, what if we made it a part-time role? What if you were remote? And me being like, it was such like whiplash to be like, oh, people can just respect you and meet you where you're at and appreciate you and not like hold your self-worth over your head, like ransom.
Not make everything a power trip, too.
And that has been the theme moving forward, is I just like have had such free, it was such freedom since then. And also it really did feel like the best gift, preempting the last 3 years, to be like, okay, well, what if people don't like you? it's a lot easier to then be like, sorry, I can't overstep my boundaries for a social engagement in the midst of a COVID wave.
Mm-hmm.
I might just have to be your bad guy this year.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to have to be okay.
Mm-hmm.
It made it a lot easier to set those boundaries once I had tackled, like, this person was my big scary. They were my, I can never upset this person. And once I realized that there were, like, choosing myself was like, was the thing that would, I don't know. It's just like, no amount of choosing that person ever gave me the reward myself did.
Thomas, my fiance, always says, the dragon holds the treasure. Like, and so like when you fight the dragon, then you get the treasure. And I think it also like allowed you to have a baby during COVID to be able to set those really tough boundaries.
Yeah. I remember actually like had such a beautiful parallel moment where like, I do remember when I got pregnant the first time being like, again, feeling like I kind of had to lie, being like, oh, I didn't think I would get pregnant so quickly because like, I knew it was bad timing for them. I knew it was bad timing for my job. And the second time I got pregnant, we had like 6 employees just get pregnant one after the other. And my, just being like, I remember sitting down with my boss and being like, great news. I'm so sorry. Like, I'm also pregnant and having no fear, just being like, you know, oh, like I can, this is how normal people behave.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And not realizing like that is how other people move through the world. And I just never realized.
Yeah. You know, when I left my like awful job and then I started, I was like so burnt out and I got approached by a job in wedding invitations. And I should have known from the first second that I met the owner, she crazy eyes. But I went into that job and my big scary had already, you know, that had already been dealt with. He gave me a raise and then he promoted me and then he demoted me and then he tried to take away money. I mean, it was a whole thing and it was my big scary. And so when everybody else was staying at 6 o'clock and was still working, I was like, well, gotta go. Bye. You know? And when everybody else was, you know, doing this and doing that, or like they told us that the office was moving and they're like, so you need to come in on the day that we're moving, you need to come get everything in your desk and you need to move the stuff. And I was like, I don't have anything in my desk. And they were like, well, you still need to be here. And I was like, if my responsibility that day is to just move the stuff in my desk, why do I need to be here? And I was like, cool. Actually, I have a doctor's appointment that day, so I'm not going to make it. And the owner emails me back. She goes, it sounds like that was a really tough doctor's appointment to get, but in the future, you should probably check with us before making doctor's appointments. And I was like, But I was like, this is a job. Like, I'm coming in, I'm going home.
Yes. Which is how it should be.
That's how it should be.
I think so many insecure people live in fear of you realizing that because they can't like exploit you.
Well, I think somebody at some point, I mean, maybe John Ronson did with the psychopath test, but like somebody needs to address why these people keep starting companies.
I mean,
because it's so many of them.
It's, you know what it is? Because they don't want to answer to anybody.
Yeah, it's true.
That's really, it's true. I think it's like if you never have to account, if you never have to be accountable to your own actions, you get away with a lot.
And if you make yourself the boss and everybody just tiptoes around you and says how great you are and aren't you such a genius, which is also what they really want.
Yeah. And I did that. I mean, I really, if I have one regret, like the amount of like emotional bodyguarding I did.
Oh my God. We for his birthday one year, we all dressed up as this one particular picture of him. We gave him a version of like all of us dressed up as him. I got that same picture made into a bust in Vegas. So he's like a little gold plated bust of himself. I mean, it was a cult of personality over there. Before we let you go, what would be some wise words for somebody that's going through a fresh start, particularly kind of, you know, this like codependent career fresh start type of thing?
I think, you know, I was really lucky because I had a really stable safety net, right? Like I will fully acknowledge I could afford to be like, hey babe, quit my job today. Sorry, I didn't tell you I was going to do that before I left for work. Because I think, you know, a big part of it is like, even if I was never actually in any real danger of any sort of instability, it felt like it. Right. Like, I was like, I'm going to lose all my friends. I'm going to lose all my professional contacts.
Yeah.
Some of that did come true. Like, I couldn't talk to certain people because there was definitely a sense of you have to pick sides, you know? And so I do think being able to like sort of work through that sort of like, not just being like, it's not being willing to lose it all. It is, you know, building up parts of yourself and your support network so that when it does sort of cave in, you still have like a soft place to land. And I think, you know, part of that is just like recognizing where that already exists, right? Like Michael was so, I've never seen Michael happier than the day I quit my job. He was like, please quit all your jobs forever. I hate it. You know, like my best friend being like, every time I wanted to sort of hedge my commitment to quitting, being like, absolutely not. Like, you are not going back there.
Yeah.
I think is the reason I was able to really follow through. And then I do feel like the thing I walked away from, the biggest lesson I learned was like, it will, like, if you can flex the muscle of discomfort, of being, oh God, I just had avoided that situation for so long where somebody looks at me and goes, you suck. And I do everything in my power to be like, no, I don't. Please let me prove to you I'm a good person. If you can just swallow that, you don't like, it's a muscle you have to build. If you can just
Yeah.
swallow that and be like, it's okay that you believe that because I don't believe that about myself.
Yeah.
That is the thing that will set you free. And it will feel impossible. I still don't know if I would have done this if I hadn't been put in a like, on a call with somebody who was like, how you feeling? And I was me being like, not good. Think I need to do this now. I don't know if I would have had the courage to go through with it. And
Yeah.
now that I've been doing it for 3 years, I can sit down with people and go, you know, months before it has a chance to get to that place, I can sit down with them and go, hey, these things actually like aren't super working out for me right now. Can we pivot? Can we go in a different direction to like keep things where they need to be? And if the person is good and healthy, they'll be like, oh my God, yeah. And if they're not, they'll be like, no, and I can recognize now that that's like not a good situation to be in.
Yeah, absolutely.
100%.
That's very good advice. The last question, and then we'll let you go. What was the last thing that you ate and truly loved?
Might be a dangerous question
No,
right
because I didn't love that. And the minute I finished eating it, I was like, this was a mistake. Okay, give me 1 second to think about this because these, I don't know what it is. These, I could talk for literal hours on end. And these questions, I'm always like, who am I as a
That's what
person?
Jenny always
That's
says.
every time.
And every time she asks the guest, we've recorded like 100 episodes. Every time she asks the guest, I'm like, I don't know. I'm scared.
I'm like, what? I just need to think back for one brief moment. Actually, you know what? I recently moved back to New England and we have bagels again. Okay. Living in
Oh.
California for 10 years, New England bagels, I know it's going to sound crazy, Maine rivals New York. I don't know if they're
Okay.
as good, but they are. If New York's a 10, Maine's an 8. And
Eight's
so
passable. It's two bagels. An eight's two bagels is what it is. So,
exactly. We have Italians and we have good water. I don't know what else you need to make a bagel.
yeah, juice.
I know. I'm like, why did I say that? Like, Jewish people didn't invent bagels. I'm like, Italians understand dough.
They're right. We're right there, you
Like,
know?
it's an adjacent straight line from pizza to bagels. But I had a lovely bagel, an everything bagel toasted with cream cheese and a maple latte.
Oh, I
That
love
sounds
maple
right.
lattes. I
I
love them.
feel
I haven't been eating enough bagels since I've been home, and I only have 2 months left until I leave again, so I feel I should be eating more bagels.
should probably have a freezer full of bagels like I do.
I could just go to the shop. I live in New York, so it's
Okay,
easier.
that's true.
Well, Maddie, it's always such a pleasure to talk to you and see your face. And you are one of our angels on earth and our bright,
Yes.
shining star people. And you're going to come back and talk about all the other things on the pod, and perhaps host your, maybe you'll be our one of our backup hosts I was going to
if
say maybe Maddie can be a backup
yeah,
co-host.
I'm lining up backup co-hosts if I need them.
You
So,
call and I will come running. Okay. This
yes,
was such.
exactly.
Such a delight. Thanks for A, having me here and B, just like being part of my life
We
and
love
being
you.
one of the people I was able to text when I was going through this.
Oh, I remember. I
We're
remember. Yeah, I
like
remember.
top of the list. I was like, okay, Olivia says I'm all right. And she says exactly
I
like as hard as it feels like it is. So
also,
I can
just
keep
for the
going.
record, told you to have the second child.
and you listen to me.
And he's very cute.
I just, on the record, I need the world to know that Raph is here because of me.
I actually do remember that. Now, I don't remember anything I ever say. I just want you to know that. It's a but now that you say it, I did.
You called me and you were like, should I? I'm like, you talked to a psychic and they said that
remember
there was
this. There was a spirit of a child.
Right.
Olivia's never on the phone with anyone like this.
And you said, I have a question. Should I have a second child? And I said, absolutely. You're going to have a boy and you need to have a brother for Lincoln. And he's here and he's like the world's cutest baby.
Really, I want to say it on air publicly. Maddie's children are very cute.
Yeah.
Thank you. I do take that personally. So I appreciate you should. You both.
I receive
for pushing
that.
Me in that direction because he is just a little chub. Such a little.
Thank you for listening to today's story. We're always here and we're proud of you.
A Fresh Story is produced by Fresh Starts Registry, the first and only platform for everything you need to begin again. You can read the show notes and learn more about today's episode at afreshstory.com.
As always, we want to remind our listeners that while we strive to provide accurate and helpful information, we are not medical doctors or mental health professionals. We want to remind you all that the information shared in this podcast is not a substitute for professional advice. We highly recommend consulting a qualified healthcare or mental health professional for any concerns or questions you may have. Remember, we are a podcast, but we are not licensed medical professionals. Always consult with your healthcare provider for any medical decisions. And as a gentle reminder, all opinions are our guests and do not necessarily reflect our own.